Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs.
Back in your pocket.
Good morning, you beautiful bunch of truckers, and welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. It is Tuesday, December 12th. It's time for the Power Hour. Got Pete and Leroy with me today. Bruce is traveling and won't be able to join us. We are live today. Phone lines are open, so pick up the phone and join us. 319-527-6791. Is the number to dial. You can also use the call now button on your app. That'll get you right in. Go ahead and line up those calls. We will stay here today for 2 hours or until we run out of questions. It's totally up to you. I am at my final stop before making it home tomorrow. I'm in Boise. I got in, rolled in about 8 o'clock last night. And got up nice and early this morning, got some work done. Got meetings this afternoon and a dinner tonight, and then I will get up early and head home. Should be home before dinner tomorrow. You know, this trip, I almost made the trip from Nashville to Boise in 2 days. The first day I got about 1,000 miles in that first 24 hours, a nice start. Then I got stuck in Wyoming in a crazy windstorm and sat out almost 24 hours there. I did get to about 200 miles in that day before I had to quit. And then I finished the trip yesterday. So 200 miles on that third day, but otherwise I made it in almost 2 days. Couldn't do that with an ELD. But I will tell you, I did it absolutely safely. There was not one time where I was tired or unsafe at all. Sometimes it pays to just listen to your body. It's been a good trip. Yesterday was a little rough. I still had some snow across Wyoming and a little bit in Utah. Traffic wasn't too bad. I've been running really early in the morning and later at night. So it's been a good trip. I am really, really looking forward to getting home. By the time I get home, it'll be right at 2 months and about 5,000 miles. Very productive trip. Got to meet with a lot of our partner companies, did some relationship building. Lots of things in the works. We will be talking about them. I am looking forward to the holidays. I'll warn you now, I'm going to be taking some time off the show. I need it. So probably during the Christmas and New Year's holiday, I'll probably take at least a week off of the show. I'll also be using that time to work on some of the new projects we've got coming up for next year, but not a whole lot. I'm going to just take some time and relax. All right, I'm not going to waste a whole lot of time this morning because we've got calls already coming in. So let's hear from Pete and Leroy, and then we will get to your calls and questions. Keep them coming. Like I said, we'll stay here for 2 hours until we run out of questions today. Pete, Leroy, good morning, guys.
Good morning, Kevin. How are you today?
Doing good. I am I'm not quite in the same time zone as home, but I'm getting closer.
It's been a long trip. I know a week away from home, I'm ready to head back home.
Yeah.
It's been not quite a long time.
2 months is a long time. I can't even remember the beginning of the trip.
No, that's definitely long. Well, it's good. It was productive, though.
It was very productive. A little crazy, too. On Saturday morning early is when I left Hendersonville, Tennessee, which is where they got hit with the tornado.
You were gone by the time it hit?
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't even see any bad weather. When I got up, it was dry. It wasn't raining. It was fairly clear. And I didn't have any bad weather getting out of Tennessee at all. But, boy, it must have been right behind me.
Good thing you got out of there.
Yeah. Yeah, I did see 75-mile-an-hour winds in Wyoming, though.
That'd be tough on the coach.
I It's the worst wind I've ever driven a vehicle in, and it was the, I'm going to use the word afraid. There's no place to get off. I'm not going to pull over on the side of the highway and then get blown over onto the highway. There weren't really any exits yet. The rest areas were slammed full. There was no place to park in any of the rest areas. I ended up driving about 2 hours. I thought I could get through it. And then as I was getting up to the top there of the pass, it actually started pulling the awnings out away from the coach. And these awnings are, I've got like 80 feet of awnings. I have four big awnings down both sides. They're about 20 feet each, four of them. And it would unroll the awning about 2 or 3 feet away from the coach and then slam it back in. And I thought, man, if one of those gets torn up, I'm not going to be able to go anywhere. So I finally decided, and I was down to 3.5 miles to the gallon.
Wow.
As my rolling average. Yeah, it was just brutal. And the trucks were slowed down to like 30 and 35 going up the hills. But even trying to get around them then, because nobody could stay in their lane. It was so gusty. Finally, I got off. I parked. Have you ever heard of Buford, Wyoming? It's kind of famous.
No, I haven't.
Here's what it's famous for. There was a time when they had a sign up and it said Buford, Wyoming, population 1. There was one guy who lived there and he owned the little convenience store off the only exit. And then I forget what happened. I read at one point he either died or he moved. So the convenience store is still there, but whoever worked there must not live in Buford. So the population was 0. That's where I parked that night. I proclaimed myself mayor for the night.
There you go.
Yeah.
Good. I've only been in wind like that one time, and we don't get that around here. You know, with the valleys and the hills, we don't get wind like that.
Right.
But I was at the Vegas truck show. I had to run at a bike and went up to Utah. And on the way back, I was trying to outrun a storm. And it's coming south 15 through the river, Virgin River Gorge. And moving pretty good, running 75, 80 on the bike, and went around the bend, and there's openings there. So you have a hillside at one moment and go around the bend, and it's wide open. And it literally took me and the bike to the next lane, and I had no control over it. And that scared the crap out of me. That was scary.
Well, gorges are known for wind. I live in a gorge, one of the windiest in the country. We're world famous for all of our wind and water sports. So I'm used to driving in wind. About 90% of the driving I've done in the last 10 years has been in the gorge. And I've driven the coach through the gorge, and it's windy. There's no doubt. Sometimes it's rough, but I've never experienced anything like this in a vehicle. It was bad.
I bet. Especially in a coach, of all things.
Yeah. Well, this thing's worse than a truck. There's no brake anywhere in the wind. It's low to the ground. It's tall. There's no gaps anywhere. The wind is just really hard on this thing.
I bet.
So, Leroy, I'm wondering if you're going to remember this. You're the one that's closest to your school days. Why is there so much wind in the gorge? What is the effect?
Gorge, windy effect.
Pete, this has an effect on engines too. When you hear the name, you'll understand why.
Okay.
It's called the Venturi effect. When you force air through a smaller opening, it has to speed up.
Like at a tunnel. That's what I say.
Right.
Not to get in it. Not a tunnel, but under an underpass during a hurricane or tornado.
Tornado.
Because it speeds up through there. People
would
try to take refuge underneath the underpass and makes it worse for them.
Yeah, that's a Venturi effect.
Did not know that.
That's our tip for the day. We learned something. So, Pete, what's on your mind today?
Oh, a couple things. Real quick, the schedule. This week and next week's booked up, but we're Christmas. So if anyone needs something from Christmas on, we can get people in. So just give us a call and we'll get you scheduled in.
All right.
Well, I get caught up. I read an article. Have you heard of Range Energy? that makes trailers?
No.
So it's something similar to the Helion, where they have the axle in the back that's electric.
Yeah. Okay.
They have a battery pack. I guess I understand your theory behind it, but it just doesn't make sense. They have a 200-mile range, which is pretty much worthless. I mean,
yeah,
other than maybe, you know, the Coke and Pepsi trucks that deliver to convenience stores would be the only one that would use at your home every night. Charge time, unless you have the fast chargers, 10 and a half hours, which would be fine, you know, overnight.
That's kind of long, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Compared to, like, 15 minutes to, like, fill up your truck with diesel?
Yeah, if that, really. I mean, if you're...
You get, like, 1,000 miles out of that?
Yeah. And now, is that actual regenerative? Does it gain any power back?
So, it does do that. So, it works up the kingpin when you accelerate. The kingpin fuels to pressure, and then it would put power to the trailer wheels as you need it. And when you brake, it does the same thing, which will then regenerate the batteries to some extent. And they're claiming a 3.25 mile per gallon increase. But if it's only good for 200 miles, it limits, you know, where who's going to be able to use it.
It's not going to be on for 200 miles, you know, if it's only powering going uphill. And then it's downhill.
It depends on where you're at, of course.
Yeah, you might get a little bit more out of it.
Yeah, but
still.
It's still, you know, if someone for 500 a day, it's not going to do them any good.
For a small investment of 200,000, you too can gain 3 miles per gallon.
Yeah, so, and then that's the other thing. That, you know, I was reading about it. No information on price yet. You know, so,
they don't want to say.
Yeah, so
this
at that point,
affordable.
Yeah, you got $400,000 a trailer to go 200 miles a day with it. They seem to make things. I think with the emissions, they can go up different ways that would make it a lot easier. You know, really crack down on the deleted trucks, get them off the road.
Right.
Get the old trucks off the road.
The problem is
you pollute a lot.
The problem now is this isn't about emissions anymore. This is just this whole green push. This company probably got a ton of tax money and subsidies, and they'll probably get subsidies for selling their vehicles. And what a horribly complicated setup to gain a little bit of fuel mileage once in a while. Did they happen to mention how heavy this thing is? It's going to cut way into your payload, I'll bet.
They didn't mention weight. But they did say it does 10,000 foot-pounds of torque, which got to be a misprint. You couldn't keep tires on it.
No, you probably – I mean, if you think about, like, you know
– each wheel doing 20 pounds.
If your engine makes 1,000 foot-pounds of torque, and then you go through a transmission that multiplies that up, and then you go through an axle ratio that multiplies it up, you can get 10,000 foot-pounds at the wheels. But, you know, I think that math is a bit deceiving.
That's very deceiving. Yeah. And then what kind of handling issues might you face on slippery roads?
Yeah, never thought about that one.
Because
it
would be trying to accelerate at times, and the deceleration from the recovery could be an issue on a slippery road.
Lock up the wheels.
Yeah.
The answer. The only cool feature about this is if you know, have a fleet of trucks in your home every night, there's a shopping cart mode. So they could move the trailers around without a truck.
Oh, okay.
So if you're in a yard, that'd be a nice feature. You know, you don't have to have a little yard truck to move stuff around, but that's an expensive
get like a $4,000 yard truck.
Yeah, for sure.
Versus your $80,000 self-moving trailer.
Yeah.
And that's for one trailer. So if you had a fleet, you'd have to buy a fleet of trailers.
You know,
it's just like, I don't know if it adds up.
No, I don't think so.
Well, here's part of the problem for long-haul over-the-road fleets. Their typical ratio is 3-to-1 trailers to trucks. That's typical. That's why you don't see them do a lot of fuel-saving devices on their trailers, because the return on investment gets cut by two-thirds, it takes you two-thirds longer to get your return on investment because you're buying three trailers for every one truck.
So if it gets 3 miles per gallon better, so then you're saying it's only 1 mile per gallon better once it comes out.
In essence, yeah. Now, yeah. You know, I was thinking about this, a local P&D operation. So when I first started, I used to do 20 to 30 stops a day, just general freight, picking up and delivering all kinds of general freight. And I very seldom ever did 200 miles. I mean, most of my days were about 150, maybe 200 miles on a big day, and weight didn't matter. So if it was cost effective, it might actually end in a P&D operation. I'm not going to run 3-to-1 trailers. So there may be some uses for it if it's cost effective.
Yeah. Yeah, again, a small niche market, I think.
Yeah, yeah, certainly not over the road. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever in truckload when the weight is going to reduce your payload. 200 miles a day isn't going to do you a whole lot of good. And where and when are you going to charge this thing when you're on the road?
Every night, yeah, you wouldn't be able to. And what they did say is once you're out of battery, it just becomes a trailer at that point. Pretty much.
Yeah,
and then maybe right on the off. A heavy trailer at that, yes.
Yeah, it becomes a heavy trailer. The batteries have to weigh a lot. The technology in the axle's got to weigh something. Now, here's the other thing I would do if I were to buy one of these to run local. The entire top would be covered in solar panels. That's a lot of room for solar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely extend the range quite a bit.
Yeah. Yeah, and a local P&D
operation. There's no sun.
Well, yeah, if I were trying to do it.
A sunny day today. Thank goodness.
Yeah. All right. Leroy, what's on your mind today?
Not a whole lot. Just been busy. We've been doing a bunch of vibration analysis lately. We got an article coming out about one about on a Volvo with a D13. We found a broken motor mount that we found that the bolts weren't in it from using the vibration analysis machine. So that was a cool story. Like I said, the article is coming out soon. And then there's also another one we got in the shop right now that's got a vibration around 60 miles per hour. So seeming like it's a tire or something, but haven't got to look at it a whole bunch. Just got back from a test drive and came to the show. But I've been doing a lot of that lately. So,
hey, I just got a message. I think it's from Joel, but I'm not sure. Phone number looks familiar. Normally I don't get a text on this number, but it sounds like something Joel would be doing. He said he actually went out to California and he checked that trailer out and he says it's not what we're thinking. He actually might get the demo one, so we may get a better report on that.
Good.
Yeah. So one other thing, and then we're going to get to calls because they're starting to pile up on us. So, you know, we talk a lot about codes and all the new technology and all that. I just had a good example of just the old school two gauges and a quick troubleshooting on what was going wrong. So it was the day of all the wind, so that was kind of a weird day anyway. So I was struggling a little bit going up the hills. And, you know, since the tune, Leroy, I don't ever struggle going up hills. I was losing 4 or 5 miles an hour, and I thought, boy, that wind must be really strong. And then I noticed that even when the wind died down just a little bit, it was still struggling a little. So what two gauges do we always talk about, Pete?
Boost gauge and pyrometer.
And both boost gauge. Now, my boost was down almost 8 pounds. Normally, I can max out at about 50 pounds of boost. I was struggling to get 42 or 43 pounds of boost. With the history of all the boost leaks on this thing, I immediately thought, oh, boy, I've got another boost leak. And then I thought, well, let me just check. So the pyrometer was down as well. So I popped in needed fuel anyway, popped in needed fuel, switched out a fuel filter, and everything was fine.
Yeah, that's a nice thing about those two gauges. You don't have boost and you don't have heat, indicates we're not getting fuel. And fortunately,
yep.
It was just a clogged filter and not a pump issue.
Yeah, Yeah, it was. I really think I got a bad load of fuel because my generator was running a little rough last night too. So I need to change another filter, I guess. But as soon as I changed out the engine fuel filter, everything was fine.
Good. Easy fix.
Yep. And it couldn't be easier to change a fuel filter on this thing. It's actually in one of the bottom compartments, so it's nice and clean. It never gets dirty. It's right there where you can spin it off and spin another one on. And it's even got the little cat pump on it. So nice, easy fix.
Good.
All right. Anything else, or should we get to some calls?
I think you should get to some calls.
All right. Let's do that. Let's go to Florida. Brian, welcome to the program.
Hey, guys. Morning. I want to start with a question first, and then I'll do the backstory. But on a bridge nut, what would cause a bridge nut to back off on the valve train?
No, I have no idea.
You know what
don't.
I'm talking about when I say a bridge nut.
No, not really. I've not heard
the,
that.
Okay. The nut that locks down the adjustment when you do a valve adjustment and the nut that locks it down once you have it adjusted.
Vibration. Yeah. It's the only thing I can think of.
And was anyone into the engine prior to this?
Yes. That is the backstory, is a month and a half before that, I had a valve adjustment done by a dealer. And I had a head gasket, and then they had to do the valve adjustment. And they said they didn't do anything wrong. And if it was loose, it would have came loose. It would have came apart within 100 miles, 200 miles, 300 miles. And I had about 15,000 miles on it, maybe, if that. And I got up in the morning, everything was fine, took off about 10, 15 miles down the road. It felt like I was on a rumble strip, and I'm looking, and it was dark out. I'm like, wait a minute, I'm not on the side of the – no. And then all of a sudden, as soon as I realized that I was on the road and not on a rumble strip, all hell broke loose, and I dropped the valve, and it wiped out the motor.
Yeah, that's severe failure. So if it was left completely loose, you wouldn't make it past a road test. And
right.
I've had that happen to me many years ago, young mechanic. I left it, and I don't think I was 3 miles from the shop, and it started ticking. I pull over, and they brought me some tools down, and cut the valve cover off, and, you know, I obviously could see what was going on there.
Right.
Well, if they just mildly snugged it, that would give you some time to run before it became loose, but
that's,
you know,
what I was trying to explain to them, and they just don't want to hear that, and they don't want to honor any part of their warranty. Now, the good side, let me preface this. So on the good side is they wanted $28,000 to fix this motor. I'm like, nope. So I actually got with Vic and Sarah and Henry and talked to them, and I went out and I upgraded the truck. It was a 2000 Mack, and now I'm in a 2020 Cascadia with the 228 rears. My fuel mileage is, you know, beyond what that Mack could ever do. So that's the good thing. But, yes, I wanted to know about this nut because I have an appointment with an attorney already to go after him.
Yeah, it was probably snugged up just enough to hold out for a month. And,
right.
And bring, you know, as long as it wasn't damaged in any way, and I don't know if you had the nut in hand.
No, it wasn't damaged. I have pictures of it and stuff, and even the other Mack dealer that I had it towed into, they said it backed off. Now, the Mack dealer that did it in Des Moines, they said that the only time they replaced those, it's like a lock nut, but it doesn't have like a nylon or anything. It's just, mm-hmm. you know, they call it a bridge nut. And they said the only time they replace those is when they get stripped out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I would run into issues with the nut. If it was over-tightened in the dredge, what would happen is as you tighten the jam nut, you're holding the adjustment screw from moving. You couldn't
right.
do that. It would want to grab and turn the adjustment screw, so you could never do the setting right. And then at that point, you'd replace the nut. That didn't happen too often. And I don't think I ever recall when I worked in a shop a nut, you know, breaking or failing in any way. If it came loose, it was left loose.
Okay. Well, I'm just trying to get all my ducks in a row and stuff and get as much knowledge as I can, you know, and run it by you guys just to see so I can explain it to
Brian
and stuff. Yeah.
Brian, let me give you some advice on suing them over this. It's never a fun process. Where did you get the work done?
Howes B. Mac in Des Moines.
Where do you live?
In Des Moines.
Okay, good. At least it's close to home, so you don't have to worry about it.
Yep.
Because if this was in California, you'd have to sue them in California, and it becomes really difficult. So that's the first thing.
Well, yeah. I've been through this with, we'll just say, a national truck repair shop. And they screwed a U-joint up years ago, and I went after them. It took me 2 years and $22,000, but I did prevail.
And that's what I was going to say. It's never easy. Here's what I would highly recommend before the first court date. Find yourself an expert witness.
Oh, I have a few of them.
Okay. Yeah, don't go alone.
Yeah.
Because they will bring five master technicians who swear that nut could not have been left loose. And you need somebody on your side.
Yep. That's why I wanted to reach out to Pittsburgh Power, you know, and then I do have other people that have, I do have some expert witnesses already lined up.
Yeah.
So
get them.
That's what I need it, guys.
And,
$28,000 is nothing to blink at. So,
no, it's not.
You know, I'm willing to done it once. I'll do it again. So, lesson learned. But anyhow, all right. Well, I appreciate the information, guys. You guys have a good day.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Colorado. Anthony, welcome.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are we doing today?
Good. What's on your mind?
I had a question for Leroy. So I parked my truck for a couple of days in the Front Range, and it can be really cold at night. And I thought, got this idea about doing a solar trickle charger, wondering if that's a good idea. It also came with one of the leads for a plug-in to the cigarette lighter, and I'm wondering if that's okay to put it in that way.
I'll answer, and then Leroy can jump in as well. Anytime we can trickle charge batteries, it's a good thing. And solar charging is basically free once you have the equipment. It's a good, nice trickle charge. I'm not a big fan of going through the cigarette lighter. Leroy may have another opinion, but the more solar you can put up there, the better your batteries are going to be. Just good conditioning, and anytime it's sitting, it's really good. Any thoughts, Leroy?
Yeah, like you said, trickle charging is never a bad idea. I don't know if, like, well, it depends on what your battery, like, usage is, like if you're using a lot of battery power just sitting there. Otherwise, I don't know how beneficial it is to trickle charge batteries versus just using the alternator. If you're using a lot of power when you're just sitting there, then it starts to make sense. But I mean, for as little as, I don't know how many solar panels you can put up there, but you're probably not going to get a whole lot. I mean, you get like 1 kilowatt per square meter, and then you get like 30% of that once you go through all the losses and everything. So you're not going to get a whole lot, but you'll get some trickle charge, depending on the time of the year too. But yeah. Are you using a lot of power just sitting? Or
no, you know, I generally tend to shut everything down as much as I can. I mean, the truck, I think, is keeping the computer powered. The other question I had, like, I don't really want to put it through the cigarette charger, cigarette lighter. It doesn't seem like a good idea to me. But the leads are really short. So if I extended the leads, is that going to cut down on the actual power the batteries are going to get?
No, not the short amount you could do.
No.
Okay. All right. I guess that's it. I got to give a shout out to Pete too. We've been working on getting this, getting me in there this spring. He's made a quote for me, super nice. We did some Black Friday deals, and I missed his email, and he called me back. So I appreciate the follow through. It's always a sign of quality for me. So I'm looking forward to coming out there and seeing you guys. So thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Excellent. All right. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Alabama. Tony, welcome.
Hey, Kevin. Hey, Pete and Leroy. I thought Bruce was flying back.
He is. He's on a plane.
He's traveling today.
I see. Well, I was down there in Theodore, Alabama. Do you know where that is? Yeah.
I do.
Getting myself getting a early Christmas present from Fleet Air Filters. I had
Are you getting one of those sexy powder coated air filters?
No, we'll see on later on. But I don't think so.
Pete, have you seen those yet?
I have not seen them.
Man, are they nice. He can do any colors, custom colors, multicolors. I know it's an air filter and it's inside and you're never going to see it, but boy, when you take it out, is it sexy looking.
Good. Good.
Yeah. They're pretty cool. All right, go ahead, Tony.
It's in a really big box, so they made sure it was the right one, but I don't know. We'll see, I guess. What I was calling in about, speaking of 228 gear ratios, is on these lower gear ratios, all things being equal, boost pressure, transmission. I know I got the Packard with the Eaton Fuller that's slow, but with the same everything, say I had a Volvo transmission now, is that truck slower off the line? Like if you're using 20 pounds of boost, like getting up off a stoplight? I asked before and they went into my transmission and didn't really answer. They're going to be slower off the line, right? The lower the ratio is in the axle.
Well, first off, let's correct something. The lower the number, you actually describe it as a higher ratio. So we're talking about very high ratio trucks these days, not low ratio trucks. Low ratio would be like 410, 413, that kind of stuff. This is a high ratio, a low number. So just to clarify that. Here's the other thing. There's a lot of variables here. You've got an awful lot of gearing going on. You've got tire size that affects this. And here's my point. I've driven trucks with these crazy high gear ratios that, we are now might be getting under two at some point. These really low two ratio trucks accelerate just fine. You're not going to notice a bit of difference. And honestly, your goal is not to accelerate really fast anyway. It's hard on the tires. It's harder on fuel. The idea is to accelerate nice and easy. Progressive shifting does that same thing. A lot of people feel like progressive shifting really slows down the acceleration, but in reality, it doesn't. And it's just easier on the driveline. It's easier on everything. So no, these high ratios are not causing anybody to feel like you can't accelerate.
Yeah. I don't want to forget to thank Terrence for helping me out. Saying something about my heat with all he's going through, that just says something about the tribe. I think what it is in this heater is they've probably going to have to take out the dashboard and some proprietary thing with Peterbilt. The auto button does work, but for some reason I have full heat in the bunk when the truck is stopped, but as soon as I start rolling, there's it dissipates and goes to just lukewarm and not real hard and no heat at all while you're driving. And in fact, with everything off, there's like this cool breeze coming through the vents with nothing on. So you got any thoughts on that?
I don't have any.
Might be like the blend door or something, because you say that it works for some of the time and then not others. So if the blend door is going in the wrong direction, then that would cause that issue.
Yep. Sounds like it.
Sounds like that's going to require some troubleshooting.
Going to require what?
Troubleshooting.
Yeah. And I don't, you know, we were just talking about bad service. You know, I've had problems with Peterbilt. So I've lately found out a lot of these things can just be done at a Petro. Oh, I meant to ask Pete. I forgot if you said you want to do the overhead. Speaking of the valve adjustments, I really need it bad, but I got a Packard. Y'all don't do that there, right?
I'd have to check with my service guy on that one. I'm not sure if we do the valve adjustments on Packards or not. I know Cat Cummins in Detroit we do. I'll have to check with Brian and can let you know.
All right. Sounds good.
Packards in the shop.
What's that about having Packards in the shop? You have them in the shop?
I don't see many in the shop like I do the other engines.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, all right, Kevin, I got some more. What do you think? What about this as a bad business idea? I'm thinking about, you know, keeping the Packard, not trading it in, but trying to get a used Volvo with one of those high gear ratios. You know, and just to save fuel, how terrible of a business decision do you think that is?
What would be the – well, getting a truck that gets better fuel economy is a great decision. What would be the reason for keeping the current truck?
Well, because I am scared of old that a little bit in the past, especially Cummins, but this would be a Volvo. And, you know, in case – I'm afraid of somebody else's truck. This one I bought brand new, and I've been the only user, so if anything is to blame, it's me. If something goes wrong with that Volvo, I missed something, I got to have a truck to work with, and that'd be the only reason, just to have it as a – and I'm just going to get nothing for the trade-in, probably, with a million miles almost.
Well, and you can sell it on the open market. If it's got a million miles – it might not be a bad idea to keep it. And that was what I was going to get to next. What are the numbers? How much is this thing worth on the open market? And it may only be worth 15 or 20,000. Well, if that's the case, it may be a good idea to keep it. Having a spare truck is a good thing. What I didn't want you to do is keep a $40,000 or $50,000 truck around as a spare. If that were the case, if this thing were, say, it was worth $40,000 and you wanted a spare, I'd sell it and buy a $10,000 spare truck. But if this one's got a million miles on it, it's probably worth keeping as a spare. Now, but let's go back to your premise of you bought this one new and somebody else bought the Volvo you're going to end up buying. What makes you so special? Just because you bought a truck doesn't make it more reliable than the truck that I bought and then sold to you 6 years later. I mean, we can inspect a truck, we can pull ECMs, we can pull oil samples. There shouldn't be – honestly, if it comes right down to it, I have more confidence when I buy a used truck. My sweet spot was trying to find a used truck that was about a year old or less because you get the best value, the price that first-year depreciation is the biggest. So a used truck in its first year is usually the best value. And I'm more confident buying that one because now I have history. I can pull the ECM report and see this thing isn't regenning all the time. I can pull an oil sample and see there aren't any problems. I can physically inspect the truck. A brand new truck is a wild card.
Yeah, I see your point really bad there. I just don't want to, you know, they've got these used Volvos in Elizabeth, New Jersey for like $23,000. An 016 with like 635,000 miles, which I think is a good deal, but I don't want to, I'm not a good mechanic and I'm not good at finding stuff, but
I
like the
awesome opportunity for $23,000. It's really hard to go wrong. You've got a very small investment. 600 and some thousand miles gives us a really good look at if we pull an ECM report and we see fuel mileage has been good, the regens are low, it doesn't have a lot of idle time, we pull an oil sample and it looks good, a $23,000 truck with 600,000 miles on it is a complete bargain.
Yeah, and then I can use my own psychology against me because I'd say, well, why is he getting rid of it? Well, they could say the same thing to me with my
well,
truck.
Exactly what
this one's
rid
bulletproof. Whoever gets this truck is going to get a free million more miles out of this truck because my truck is bulletproof too.
Well,
what if they say that to me? What's wrong with it?
Well, but hold on. Jake, it's not that I wouldn't say that, but I can tell you why somebody's getting rid of the 600,000-mile truck. That's a really common trade-in cycle. That's a very
exactly.
common duty cycle. So there's it doesn't mean
that it's a piece of junk.
No, and we're going to inspect it to make sure it's not.
Yeah, especially if it's got an APU. Like, that APU could be trash, and it'd still be a good...
A good used APU is worth $5,000 or $6,000, and that's a third of the price of this truck, almost.
I know. Okay. Well, I was afraid you might not say that, and that I'd be an idiot to get another truck, and especially if you don't have the money for it. But, all right, this really helps my decision.
So I'll give you another opinion on the gear ratios. Joel sent me a text comparing a 308 to a 216. The speed would be faster. The acceleration speed would be faster with the 308. But if you just change your shift points, you can't tell the difference. And like I said, it's easier on everything to accelerate a little slower anyway.
Yeah, and like he said, this pack car is a freaking dog. I mean, if I gassed on it, it's fine, but that Eaton Fuller just eats me up. And I'm trying to keep it below 20 PSI, but I'm getting, you know, outrun by, like, loaded freight liners when I'm empty. And it's, you know, I think you've been saying to like, not jackrabbit start off the line anymore, and that'll save some fuel. And I'm starting to see the difference, and I like it.
Fuel, tires, driveline, clutch, you name it. Accelerating easy is easy on all of those parts.
Yeah, and I've been waiting till it gets into 10th to floor it, and that's 35 miles an hour. I mean, yeah, it takes forever to get up there, but I've still got 1, 2, 3, 4 more gears that then I start to pass people.
And let's think about something else. What percentage of your miles are actually spent accelerating?
Yeah, I know, zero, but it sure does hold up traffic, and they're weaving in and out to get behind you and then flipping you off for being slow. You know, it is an issue.
People waved at me with one finger my entire driving career.
Why?
Because they didn't like the way I drove. They didn't like being stuck behind me when I was doing 57. They didn't like the fact
why?
That I did accelerate easy.
Oh, I don't have any more why questions because I already know the answer.
That's right. There you go. So don't worry about the other people.
I had another topic if you have time because I got cut off that first time you did the show. With the new phone system, and that was
right.
I love this idea. No?
Yeah, no, go ahead.
I love this idea that you go to school for 9 years and get an MD, and all of a sudden that makes you an idiot.
That's because it's not really an education, it's an indoctrination. There's a big difference.
Yeah, it's an interesting thought because I have a lot of friends that are doctors that, yeah, I agree. They, you know, that they're in the system, but still, I think when people listen that you're going to get a lot more say if you give them some respect, even if you have to fake it. That's what I was trying to say when the phone system crashed me out.
Got it. Yeah, the big pharmaceutical companies have taken over the entire medical education system. They influence all of the medical schools. They influence virtually everything in medicine today.
These people, they think they're like the boss of the world because they have that degree, but you know, they don't know any better, but you have to, like, baby them and not, like, totally beat them up for it. Because, you know, I do give them some credit for having that schooling, but it's, you know, it might be worthless, and you just got to extract what you can out of it.
Well, I've always said in the past, bad information is worse than no information. I'd rather have no information and have to figure it out myself than to be told something wrong with authority.
Trying to think of another maintenance topic that, while we're talking about this, but I just can't. So, yeah, it's just going to piss them off more. If, you know, you're a doctor here, you think you're, you know, and that'll lose the audience. So I don't want to see that. Like when you get on Twitter with these doctors that call in, and, you know, that could be a good resource if we give him some credit for what he's done, even though, you know, we don't, kind of like having to fake it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to cut you loose. There are lots of doctors now that are finally getting a clue. Lots of them. We've had plenty of them on the show. I find more and more every day. I doubt that we'll ever turn that around completely. But, all right, we are – phones have been really light today. They piled up in the beginning. We haven't had any new calls. So we are down to our final call. If you want to jump in, now is the time, 319-527-7791. I could do for an easy day, too, if that's the case. So either way, let's go to Minnesota. John, welcome.
Hi, Kevin. Hi, guys there, Pete and Leroy. Listening back to a previous show and you, talking about the catalyst working on your hot water in your truck.
Yeah, my aqua hot.
Yeah, I have a block heater, Webasto, on my truck. The only
Same
one
idea.
I have the hour meter. Yeah, the only one I have the hot or hour meter on. So far, I've had it on for 2 years, 350 hours on that one, and I have not opened it up and cleaned it.
Yeah, that's nice. I've heard that a lot, the bunk heaters and the block heaters.
I have the bunk heater, but it does not have an hour meter, but I would have to say that has 4 to 5 times more hours on it, and I have not touched that one either.
Yeah, it makes an absolute difference. This is in the entire – I'm going back since I've owned this thing. Was that like 2015 or 2016 I bought this? This AquaHot has never, ever worked right. Now, it had some other issues. We fixed them over time. I did a rebuild on it once. But even after the rebuild, right after the rebuild, it did not work correctly. It was intermittent, and it took me a while. It's a fairly complicated system. So the AquaHot itself is a big boiler, basically. It's got a big tank of coolant, like antifreeze, except because it's running through the water system, you use propylene glycol, which is basically Evans coolant instead of ethylene glycol, and it's for the toxicity. Antifreeze is how people bump off they don't like. It's that toxic. Propylene glycol is the opposite. It's completely non-toxic. It's the same stuff you would use to winterize the entire plumbing system in a coach, because it's not toxic. So you can fill up your water tanks with it and your water lines, and then they don't freeze in the wintertime. And then when you want to de-winterize it, you just blow all that stuff back out. But any traces left behind are non-toxic. So you got the big boiler, the diesel-fired heater that heats up that boiler liquid. And then it's used for all kinds of things. It is the hot water heater, so I have on-demand, unlimited hot water. I've got 3 heating zones inside the coach, so it's the it keeps this thing nice and toasty warm without using a ton of electricity like my heat pumps would do. And it also runs hot coolant around the block, and it's a block heater as well. So it's a really nice system, but there are a lot of moving parts and a lot of places where things can go wrong. Like at one point, two of my heaters inside were working, but one would always just blow cold air. Well, that's a fix right in that heater itself. So it was like I chased all these problems, and then even after fixing, I thought, everything and rebuilding the boiler and the diesel-fired heater, there were times when I still wouldn't get heat at all, no hot water, no nothing. And I realized that what was happening is occasionally when the diesel-fired heater went to start up, it just wouldn't start. It would make all the right noises. If you were, you know, went out and looked at it, it just wouldn't fire up. And that changed on this trip. And this is the first trip that I've consistently run catalyst through every tank. And now that heater never fails to fire up. Haven't had a single problem with it this trip.
Yeah, same. I see that chemical is the same stuff I use in my solar system that I told you about. I got the solar water heats up my house and my shop floor, so it works really well. Do you happen to try those safety glasses I left you in the snowy weather at all?
I didn't. I didn't even think about it.
Yeah.
Oh,
maybe if you have your last drive home here, give them a shot. Let me know what you think.
Well, the last place I have to worry about some wet. Well, I could get bad weather anywhere in Oregon this time of year. Honestly, I haven't checked the weather. But the worst would be up the top of the Blues and Cabbage. It's almost always snowing up there this time of year.
Yeah. Well, give those a shot. See how you like those, and
we'll do.
We'll check. Check with you another time. Thank you very much. Have a nice day.
All right. Thanks for the call. Good stuff. Let's go to Iowa. Patrick, welcome to the program.
Morning, guys. So as you know, I'm using it. I'm using the catalyst in a 7.3 diesel, and all the four-wheelers and the lawn mowers and chainsaws and everything, and I don't have to tune things up in the spring as much as I was doing before. You know, this Acert Cat 750 to the ground, this thing's burning the catalyst, and depending on, you know, conditions and whatnot, we're in that 6.5 range on the quarter. Running big power, I think it does make a difference. It does absolutely keep things cleaner. I'm real excited. I'm going to Illinois to unload today and get my APU put on this 07, and that'll have the catalyst in that little three-cylinder Kubota, of course, because it's pulling fuel out of the tanks. But just want your opinion, Kevin. Should I go to synthetic on that little Kubota right out of the chute, you think, or should I wait an oil change and then go to synthetic, or what are your thoughts?
I don't think there's any reason to wait. You look at certainly every high end car now, and I don't know how far down the chain it's moved. They all come with synthetic right from the start. I mean, synthetic is just about taking over everything. In fact, the only reason I would not run a synthetic is if I had an oil that was just burning, or an engine that was burning a lot of oil, because it's going to burn more if you put synthetic in. But other than that, I put synthetic in everything, and if I put it in at the first opportunity.
Okay. Well, I think I'll get – go ahead.
No, go ahead.
So they're saying a 2,000-hour interval on this green APU that I'm going to have slammed on here tomorrow. So I think that's a little excessive. What's your thoughts on a drain interval on something like that?
I've never really worked in hours, but, I mean, we could convert it fairly easy if you're – Well, think about it. How, date-wise, how long is it between your oil changes on your truck? Roughly. 2 months?
Well, No. I've got a bypass oil filtration system on here, and I'm burning T4 Rotella, and I go somewhere between 60 and 120,000 in between drain intervals.
So how do we do the math on that? 60,000.
Well, we always figure anything running hourly is like 55 miles an hour. Couldn't you agree on that?
That's what I was thinking. It's going to be real close to 55 to 60 miles an hour. And six. So why am I having a hard time figuring out 60,000 miles would be, is that 6,000 hours? Am I doing that right? Somebody help me here. My brain's not working this morning.
60,000 miles divided by, we'll say 60, right?
1,000.
1,100. Yeah.
Okay. So 2,000 hours does seem like a lot.
Yep. That's what I thought. But I
would certainly trust the manufacturer. I don't know why they would tell us to go longer than we're supposed to or what's good for it. You know, when you look at tolerances today on these engines, they're so well built, they're not burning any oil. I would go with the manufacturer's recommendation.
Okay. It just seems a little excessive to me is all. I just...
Well, I'm trying to remember. It doesn't happen very often, but I think I changed my generator oil at 500 hours. I remember, right? Last time I changed it, Pete, was when I was there at Pittsburgh Power. And I was thinking I was going to change it after this trip just because I've used it a lot. I wasn't even going to check the hours. I was just going to go ahead and change it because it's so easy anyway.
I don't imagine it holds much oil either.
Yeah, it doesn't. It's, you know, simple. It's easy to get to the filter. It's easy to get to the drain. I bet it doesn't take me 15 minutes to change the oil on that thing.
Are you going to Louisville this year?
Yes. In fact,
taking a coach.
Yes. Okay. In fact, I got to remember to try to get reservations. Somebody said they had to apply for a reservation at the RV park this year, and they haven't heard back yet.
I know the booths are all sold out. We were getting everything squared away. We'll be in the same spot like we're always at. But I was looking through on their website, and it seems to be sold out already. Which in the past it has been. I mean, other than the pandemic years, if you don't have your booth by October, you're not getting one.
I'm surprised this year that it's this busy.
Yeah.
I wonder how much of that was people that booked early and didn't realize how slow this year might get.
You know, we've always done well at this show. I mean, the one year they were remodeling and they put us in this room with other people. It was just a mess. I mean, people couldn't talk to us.
That's
one of those deals of remodeling. What can you do? But
right. Even
in lean years, we've always stayed busy at this show.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I'll let out a little teaser here. Not a lot of information because I don't have any yet. But we are working with show management, Toby Young himself, truckstop.com, and Nastic and Let's Truck to put together probably a day and a half or 2 day event in conjunction with the show. So we might do like a full day Wednesday with an evening event Wednesday night, and then a half day Thursday, and then you can, you know, walk out of our event right into the show when the doors open. So that's about 90% that's going to happen.
Great.
Yeah. So
exciting.
I'm looking forward to it. All right, Patrick, anything else?
No, I'm just wondering if on that Kubota, do you think somebody makes an extended drain filter? You know, kind of like what we're doing on these big cats and stuff with those Donaldsons, where that, you know, that the one on the block gets me to 30 before I change it. And I'm just wondering if, you know, somebody might make that extended life filter for that little Kubota.
Put an OPS on it. Use a 4-inch filter. I bet you'd get it'd probably last a lifetime.
Probably on it again.
What's that?
Probably never change oil on it again.
Probably not. Really, if you were to put an OPS up there, it would be a long, long time before you ever changed oil, I bet.
Well, that's a great idea, Kevin. Let me see how it's plumbed.
There you go.
Hey, thanks, man. You guys have a great day.
All right.
We'll see
thanks for the call. Let's go to Texas. Kevin, welcome to the program.
Hey, guys. I got a 23 Volvo, and there's nothing wrong with it or anything, but I know Joel, since he's been messaging in, he's probably listening. But I have high gears. I have 247s. They're not the iTorque spec. I couldn't get my hands on one of those without having to order it and wait months and months and months out. So I went ahead and got this one, and it's a 23 model. I got it with 35,000 miles on it. And I got it for $164.5 out the door, and it's got an electric APU on it, and it's a Wasibo, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, bunk heater, and I love it. I hardly ever idle this thing, but I was.
Do you mean a Webasto?
Yeah, Webasto. Yeah.
Okay.
And
right.
So I hardly ever idle it. I've been using the catalyst since day one in this thing that I've had it at 35,000. I've got 74 on it. My fuel mileage is coming up a little bit because Joel said it wasn't going to be very good until after break-in, and he said it was going to drink a lot of DEF. And my DEF is like half as much as my 15 model Freightliner with that DD15 in there. And basically the same operation, catalyst in that 15 model as well. But I used to get like 320, sometimes 350 a gallon on DEF out of that DD15. And this one here, I'm lucky if I can, the most I've ever got was 180. And I am getting better fuel mileage, but I mean, holy moly, I'm filling this tank up with DEF. Almost twice a week, you know, which, I mean, I don't let it get below half a tank because I don't want the. Go ahead.
You know, I was just thinking here, we've played around with, you know, DEF consumption, and I haven't focused on it or thought about it a lot. It really seems like it's all over the board, even more so than fuel economy. I mean, people always say I'm fuel economy. Well, mine's all over. Well, of course it is. It's always going to be. But there should be a fairly tight range on fuel mileage, and we should understand why, you know, you might have an outlier because you were really light going downhill with the tailwind most of the trip or the opposite. DEF seems to be all over the board, and I'm not sure that we really understand or talk about all the reasons, but I'm thinking that if we've got a truck that's not tuned right, if we've got an overhead out, we get a poor load of fuel, a poor quality fuel, it would seem to me like all of those things are factors in how much DEF you use.
Even a boost leak could affect it.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It seems like there are a lot of variables that could affect DEF usage, and I'm not sure we understand it all that well yet.
Right. Well, I was just kind of curious about it because, I mean, I love the truck. I have no issues with it. It's got that D13 turbo compound. And like I say, my 11th gear in my I-shift is direct and 12th is 0.86 overdrive.
Okay.
So, I mean, I get like it, and I run around 65 because that's about, we deliver to, I pull dry bolt. So my fuel mileage isn't going to be the best in a hopper bottom anyway because of the drag of the trailer. But, I mean, I do everything I can with it. I am going to put me some air tabs on it to try to get the air out from underneath, out from between the trailer and the truck. And I do have my trailer as close as I can get it to where I can axle out, you know. I do have a 12.5 front axle, so I'm fixing, which I'm putting 16-ply, which would be a H-rated tire instead of a G, so I could actually put more on my stairs and still be axled out without getting a ticket. And but, yeah, I mean, I agree, your wind, your weight, there's so many factors, whether it's raining because of your water on the ground, it's going to totally throw off your rolling resistance on your tires. And I do have really good low rolling resistant tires on here. But
well, all those
are just,
in fuel economy, and I've studied fuel economy long enough and paid attention to it that I understand all the variables and why on one trip you might get worse than another. And we even say on fuel economy, there's so many variables that one truck not running dedicated routes, it is really difficult to accurately check fuel mileage improvements or problems. But I'm just not as familiar with DEF. All the things that could affect fuel economy could affect DEF economy as well. But then I think there are some others that maybe we're not always thinking about.
Right, right. Well, in a new truck, what would be, and I know you guys over there at Pittsburgh Power, you're not really that, I mean, you're knowledgeable in everything because you guys are a bunch of smart fellas over there, but what do you think a good number is? Because, I mean, my fuel economy hadn't dropped. My they say that whenever your Jake brake or your engine brake starts not working as well as it should, that it's about time for an overhead. But what is a good number on a new truck to have the overhead set?
Keep in mind, initially everything seats in quite a bit in the beginning. Now, how many miles are on this engine?
74,000, 12 miles.
Okay. So generally, the overheads don't change like they used to, but there will be things seating in place because it's a new engine. Also, we're assuming it was done right at the factory. And it could have been a Friday and someone was hungover. You never know. I would get it checked at 100,000 miles the first time, and then most of the newer trucks, I don't know about Volvo, but the other engines are 2 to 250,000 miles between overheads. But we kind of push a once a year overhead. We're always looking for fuel mileage. And if the overhead's off, you're not going to get it. And a overhead being out can affect DEF usage. You know, the load, the terrain, there's a lot of variables that would affect DEF. And I don't think 180 miles per gallon isn't horrible. I think that's probably near the average. Wouldn't you say so, Leroy?
Yeah, it's supposed to be anywhere between 2 to 4% of your fuel mileage. So 180 is pretty on par for most engines.
Okay, so then I must be past the point what Joel was talking about it drinking a lot of DEF. He said you'll check it one day. He said, you'll check your oil one day and check it the next, and it'll just, you'll have to add a gallon. He said it's sporadic when it happens. Luckily, I guess all of that happened within the first 35,000 that I did not have the truck. But, I mean, yeah, I absolutely love this thing. I just do. I mean, I just do. But anyway, that's all I got, guys. I was just kind of curious about that overhead, so, and that does make good sense just to go in there and have them do that overhead once a year. I mean, it's not but $300 or $400, and if you can't afford that, you're probably in the wrong business anyway.
Yeah,
so,
you know, we've gone back
for boost leaks at the same time, whether
right.
doing the overhead.
We've gone back and forth on this. We used to say maybe extend it out further and wait until you see some issues, but I think I like the year. Not that big of a deal. I think it's better to stay on top of it.
Right. Well, I mean, I usually take off the week between Christmas and New Year's anyway, just because of all the traveling and I'm getting kind of lazy at 53, so I really don't want to work no more than I have to. So that's just a good reason to take off that week.
There you go.
All right, that's all I got.
All right, thanks for the call. That's why I'm getting ready to take some time off around Christmas myself. This trip's been pretty busy, so I could use a little downtime. Let's see. Boy, the calls just piled up on us again. Let's go to Washington. Arthur, welcome to the program.
Hi, guys. New to the show. Really enjoy it. Keep up the good work. I have a question about the... Yep.
Could I ask you real quick? Well, welcome to the tribe and the show, by the way. How'd you find us?
Honestly, I'm aspiring to be a owner-operator. I actually work for a company now, and I've been purchased a truck to get going, and I like to do a little bit of research, and I just was looking through podcasts and stumbled upon you guys.
Well, fantastic. Welcome. What can we help you with today?
So I have a question regarding the Max Catalyst. I own several diesel pickups and some other construction equipment, and my understanding is, well, I'm not sure if I understand it correctly, but is it essentially a cetane booster? Because I currently use hot shots. Oh, no, it's not. Okay.
No. So you could confuse them, because cetane in diesel can do some similar things that the max mileage catalyst does. But cetane is an additive. That doesn't make it bad, but there is a difference between an additive and a catalyst. A catalyst chemically changes something. We use catalysts in all kinds of things. If you ever mixed up any kind of epoxy, you know, you have two tubes that will stay soft forever, mix them together, and you got about 30 seconds sometimes, and they're going to be rock hard. That's a catalyst reaction. There's a chemical change in what's happening. The max mileage is a true catalyst, not an additive. And it is changing the chemical structure of the fuel so it burns at a lower temperature and faster. So, and by doing that, you're able to burn fuel more completely, which results in less soot, which is the real goal of the catalyst. The catalyst is not designed to increase fuel economy or fuel mileage. It is designed to get the soot out of the exhaust stream and keep the emissions nice and clean.
Got it. So just a follow-up question then. If you're using the catalyst, is there a point to using the cetane, or at that point do you just use the catalyst and eliminate the cetane booster?
You know, in general, I've found that the catalyst works on just about everything, but there are some trucks we found that don't really benefit from it all that well. A well-tuned newer engine, the Volvo for sure, the Mac, even the DD series, if they're tuned right, spec'd right, driven right, we don't see a lot of emission issues with those, but those can benefit from a little bit of cetane boost.
Got it. All right. Thank you, gentlemen. That was all I had.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's go to, hold on. Try that again. Let's go to Ohio. Zachary, welcome.
Hi, welcome. Nice to finally talk to you guys. I have I've had your scan gauge for a while. I have a 99 Freightliner with DDAC 4, 12.7. Now, it always, I had 7650 injectors in it before, and it broke a spring or whatever, came apart. It came down to Pittsburgh Power. You guys put the 5915s in it. And I don't think there was any codes in it to begin with, because it had a misfire then. Fixed all that. And then all of a sudden, I guess it's been a reoccurring thing, the scan gauge would pop up two codes. It'd be like the ID2 FM5. And then it would throw like an ID1 and an FM3. What's the best way besides, I mean, obviously using a good computer, but how can I take, how can I read those codes to know exactly what it is, I guess is what I'm saying. What's the two codes to go, to get them off the scan gauge?
Yeah,
Leroy?
So you said it's a 60 series, right?
Yeah,
so I think there's a customer resources place on our website that has like code sheets, and you can go to the 60 series one, and then you can cross-reference the ID and the FMI, or you could also sort of Google. I would put an S in front of the ID, so like SID whatever FMI and whatever year it was, and then 60 series, and you should be able to find the code from there.
Oh,
and if you still have issues, just email me. We'll figure it out together.
I mean, it runs great. I just didn't understand why it always throw. Like, it would be a 2 and a 5, and then it would go, like, a 1 and a 6. And I'm like, what? Are these all different codes, or is it all just injector code? If it's even an injector code.
What's I'm not sure without kind of looking them up. I don't usually get them memorized, so.
Cool. Thank you, guys. That's it.
All right. Thanks for the call. We've got more calls, and we're going to get to them, but I'm wondering about the neighborhood I chose to park in last night. I got in really late after a long day of driving, so the RV park I chose was fairly close to where I needed to be, but I'm wondering if I have a meth den next to me or a house of prostitution. I'm not sure which one. I watched the husband get up and I watched the husband get up and leave this morning and go somewhere, and I've seen an awful lot of shady looking characters walk up to the trailer. There's one in there now. I'm not sure what's going on. I think it might be
Not good.
Yeah, it's I've got a front row seat right here. My it's kind of a tight park too. So the window next to where I'm broadcasting from is only about 10 feet away from their door. So in a front row to all the action. All right, let's get to some phone calls. Let's go to Wisconsin. Abe, welcome to the program.
Good morning. I've got a question about an oil sample that I don't know if she's poured it to you or not.
Yeah, I've got it here. So let's go through this. So we've got 636,000 miles. I'm going to guess that's on a rebuild, right?
It is.
First rebuild, do you know?
Actually, it's the second one.
Second.
Both of them were in frames.
About 50,000 miles on this oil. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And
I'm kind of new to the extended change, and on the previous oil change, I finally did switch over to T5. I just always ran T4, and trying to extend the intervals a little more slowly, and lead rate got raised a little bit, so I was curious if I need to be concerned or not.
Do you have a bypass filter?
I do.
Which
been
one?
On there for, I got the 10-inch DOPS.
Okay. So I am actually a little concerned. Pete, so we've got two in frames on a 3406E. We've got 636,000 miles. Nothing in the oil would indicate any kind of a problem. No fuel dilution, virtually no soot, less than 0.1. Silicone has been 4 on every other sample. It's only 5 now. No coolant whatsoever, but the lead jumped up to 17. It had been, 4 or less on every other sample, and now it's up to 17. What do you think?
So, I mean, it sure sounds like bearings, and the older engines lead in their bearings compared to the newer trucks, which are not. So it definitely is something to look into. Now, it could be lead from a bearing on an air compressor as well. I mean, are you noticing the air compressor being noisier or maybe a little slower to build up air?
And here's the other, let me just get, all the wear metals on this engine have been extremely low. I'm looking at 4 or 5 samples back. nickel, zero, chromium, zero, and we finally just had one. Aluminum at one or two. It was at three this time. If we go way back, there was a big spike in copper, but there was no lead prior to that, so that was probably just an oil cooler. And we've got 13 on copper now. I doubt that that's coming from the bearing, since we're just now starting to see lead for the first time. So I think we might be seeing some bearing wear, but it could be a compressor.
And also, this is the first time that I ever put that many miles on a single oil change too. So, and the reason for that first end frame, it was done kind of prematurely. I had a O-ring go start leaking. Actually, I had an oil cooler fail, and I believe that's what caused the O-ring to leak on one of the cylinders. And I just, it had like 860,000, I think, at that time. And I just decided to, it was the same labor cost. So I just decided to put an end frame in at that point. That's why it was, first one was early. And then on that second one, I think I might have ran a little bit too hard. I had a tune in it and thought I might have cracked the head on it. And turned out it had a crack in one of the liners. That's why that end frame was done.
Okay, so I'll go back over it again. This thing is running really well. It's tuned really well. We're not seeing any soot or fuel dilution. Wear metals have been extremely low up until this point. We just saw a little spike in lead. All I would do at this point is just keep an eye on that lead number. I would make sure I was sampling every 20 to 25,000, and if the lead continued to climb, I'd probably inspect the bearings. We're checking compressor. Hey, Pete, that compressor.
Changing to a two.
I'm sorry, what was that, Kevin?
Is there any way to figure out if this is coming from the compressor? Any easy way to check that?
So the simple things we'll do. Now, a compressor can wear out a couple of different places, the cylinder itself, the bearings. If it's noisy, slow to build air, discharge line off when there's no air in the system, fire the truck up and put a piece of cardboard or paper at the discharge and see if it's spitting any oil, which could indicate the air compressor starting to fail. Other than that, that's about it.
Yeah.
Or if there's simply a lot of miles on it, replace it. I don't know if it got replaced during a rebuild or not.
I've replaced it once, but I don't recall how many miles ago it was. I do know it's putting just a little bit of oil into the wet tank.
Okay. Yeah, it's an indication the air compressor's on its way out.
Okay. Now, changing to the T5 oil, would that have any effect on the lead going up?
It really shouldn't. You know,
because I was thinking I was going to a better oil.
You are. Synthetics are better, so we don't see more wear. Again, I'll go back to, if you already have wear on an engine and it's burning oil, when you put synthetic in, you can expect to burn more. But it still protects better. It is a superior oil, and it protects better. So I don't think you have an oil issue here. I would stick with the T5. But I would it might be a good time to replace the compressor. It sounds like it could have an awful lot of miles on it. And other than that, I would just watch this lead number, and if it keeps going up, I might inspect bearings.
Okay.
It's nice about the sampling. It gives us a heads up before there's a major problem.
Yeah, you're way ahead of the curve on this. If it is bearing metal we're seeing, this is the very, very beginning of it.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, I'll keep an eye on it and keep doing what I'm doing.
Perfect. All right. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Washington. Rod, welcome.
How you doing today, guys?
Good. What's on your mind?
A couple comments for a couple of the callers. One, for the gentleman that's putting the APU on, I have a carrier unit, but it still has the Kubota. I do my oil changes. It's pretty close to once a year. It's plus or minus 1,000 hours, plus or minus about 25 hours a year.
Do you have
and
the
I don't know if he'd ever...
two-cylinder or the three-cylinder?
The three-cylinder.
Okay. Because the three-cylinder, somebody just sent me this. I didn't know this, but I'm going by somebody that sent me a text. The three-cylinder, I guess, runs at 1,000 RPM less than the two-cylinder. That's pretty significant.
That I don't know. I've just always done mine. Like once a year in July, I do it, and it's usually anywhere from 1,000 to 1,050 hours.
That's
and
pretty
honestly,
hard to go down there.
And if he's thinking of an OPS, even though I've got one on this truck, I had one on my last truck, I don't think he'd ever make his money back on it. Because an oil change, if you do it yourself, you're talking, it's 3.5 quarts of oil. You're talking less than a gallon of synthetic oil and about $45 of filters.
Yeah.
So
no,
at $90, how many years would it take him to pay for that OPS?
10. 10
exactly.
Years. Right.
So as far as that's what I would suggest, that just works out like nicely once a year. And
well,
yes, I do it more frequently than they recommend because Carrier recommends 2,000 hours. I just like doing it at 1,000.
Yeah, see, I would go with the manufacturer's recommendation. If they're calling for 2,000 hours, there is no way I would do it sooner. I might even do it later. I might go longer than they recommend, but I wouldn't see any reason to ever do it sooner. You know what would be interesting? Somebody maybe you or somebody that's cutting the recommendation in half, which is that's a big cut. I'd love to see an oil sample. I bet it's really, really clean.
Sure. And somebody like Jackie might have a good number two. I believe she runs a Thermal King, but I believe it's still got the three-cylinder Kubota in it.
Yeah, Jackie's an outlier, though. Jackie's had an OPS for about 15 years, and she still changes her oil every 15,000 miles.
I know we've had this discussion on different groups about it.
Yeah, so she's an outlier.
So, and then my other suggestion was for the next caller after him that had the Volvo. If I'm not mistaken, I believe, and Joel might correct me on this, I thought he posted the other day on the newer Volvos, the DEF usage is somewhere in the 5 to 8% range on the newer models.
I'll ask him that.
So that could attribute to this guy having higher usage of the DEF.
Yeah.
And then as far as the overhead, like mine, I've got an older VGT motor, a 2017. I do my overhead once a year. I finally found Patrick Philman out in Kenosha, Wisconsin, that Diesel Brothers. I cannot give him enough credit and enough good words for people to go to him and
good.
Skip
good.
The dealers because he's cheaper, he's by the book, and he's a stickler for everything. And with the exception of when Kenny at Ploger did my first overhead on this truck when it was brand new, he did it like 100,000 miles. Other than that, this truck has never ran and sounded as well as it does after having Patrick and his boys do it. But mind, he's a fantastic kid to work with.
All right. Love it.
Other than that, I just had those couple comments. Mainly, I initially called because of the OPS on the APU. I thought, you'll never pay for it, bud. If you want to, great. But
well, you know, if you think about it, had I put an OPS on this coach when I first got it, and I've had it a long time now, there's a good chance I may not have changed the oil ever. But
right.
I still wouldn't have – I wouldn't be breaking even yet because it doesn't cost me all that much to change my oil and it's not that hard, and I just don't put enough miles on this. So for me, it was – now, if it was an easy install, I would have just done it. Nothing is easy on this one. I'd have to tear the whole bedroom apart. I mean, there's just – I guess I could plummet into that same compartment where my full-flow filter is. Maybe I will. Not a bad idea. I might. I don't know. But you're right. There are some cases where it's certainly nice protection on the engine. We're going to keep the oil really clean. We're not going to have to do any oil changes, but we may not even break even. And that would be the case on that Kubota. You'd probably never break even.
And that's where it comes down to where you've talked about the different fuel things like the hydrogen and all that bullshit is, yes, you might save here or there, but total cost of ownership is more, so it's not worthwhile to do as a business.
Right. Yep. Good stuff. All right. Thanks for the call. Let's go to California. Andrew, welcome.
Hey, guys. How you guys doing today?
Good. What's on your mind?
Hey, I just wanted to see if you guys were informed by Horizon, because I wasn't until last Friday, that their system has been down. They didn't get my sample in for quite some time because their system had crashed.
Uh-oh. Did the Chinese hack them?
You know what? I asked that question. My wife's work's been having problems. It's been going crazy.
Yeah.
You know, so I just – oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I saw a headline last night, and I've just been really busy since then, but there was some – supposed to be some sort of massive cyber attack by the Chinese on the U.S. infrastructure. And I kept headlines this morning. I didn't see anything about it.
Yeah, I couldn't find it either. After you mentioned that yesterday, I went immediately started looking for it, and I couldn't find any information on it either.
The original report came through Fox, and I saw the headline, and there weren't a lot of details. And since then, I've seen absolutely nothing.
Yeah, that's exactly what I found out. It came up Bupkis with no news whatsoever on it.
Huh. Hey, Pete, any word from Fox on your end?
No, I knew they were down earlier this week. Eric had mentioned, or last week, that they were down because he was getting they will send us if someone's oil sample is bad, they send it to us, and then we call the customer. We weren't getting any in. So Eric followed up. They said their system was down, but they were going to get it back up and running quickly. So I don't know if it's still down or not. I'll have to check with Eric.
All right. Andrew, I'm going to cut you loose. Thanks for the heads up on that. You had a really noisy line, though. Let's go to Missouri. Brandy, welcome.
Thanks, Kevin. I have a question as sort of an observation, and I don't think I'm the only one that probably thinks this way. You have said yesterday and today, and I think maybe last week, that a warning, I'm going to be taking a week off or so. As a full-time driver, talk radio is what takes you across miles and miles of high. I know you've got your live stream or the stream that you constantly play. I personally like listening to you live because there's live drivers at the time. And I learn things here. And I just dread hearing you're going to be gone for a week and then thinking, where am I going to go to next? And I'm just thinking, okay, for a business into Tuesday's show, how does that affect business? Because when you go away, it does seem that the calls don't seem to come in as like they normally do. You take a whole week off. How does that affect business? And I think there's truth to this because you can see that other shows that you guest host, people don't listen because they're not the people that they want to listen to. So they go to somebody else, and somebody else is getting their business. And I just kind of wonder. Could that happen? I'm a loyal listener.
It's kind of why I've been warning people that it's coming, because I'm flattered by this. I don't want to sound like I'm complaining about it, but when I take just one day off, I get all kinds of emails and messages all over the place. Why are you off? I missed you today. I love that, but I'm at the point where I really need some time off. I don't take time off that often. And you are right. When I take time off, when I come back, the first several days of the show will be slower. I won't have nearly as many calls. And our store sales will slow down in the weeks that I'm off. So I know it affects
people.
I know it upsets people. And I don't do it that often. But I'm at the point where I need a week off. I just really do. And I'll come back better, and I'll be fresh. I've got a lot of ideas that I'll probably work on during that week if I feel like it. If I don't feel like it, I'm just going to goof off. I just need some downtime.
Well, I remember when you were on Sirius, and I think the same the very next day how quickly you were on, and I was there, and it's like you've always been there, and it's been very nice. And just when you're gone, it's like,
You know what? You know what I always say I'm going to do? I always say before I take a week off, I will record 5 one-hour monologues. Because there's always something
I
can talk about, or I could recap the news or something. But the problem is I never really plan my time off. my time off tends to happen when I get so burnt out that I just need some time off. And at that point, there's no way I'm going to sit down and try to record 5 hours of monologues.
I listen to other shows, and they have this same feeling, too. They'll call them evergreen. They've recorded shows
for this specific
time. And it's good to know that they know that we know we don't like it. And
I realize that, and I don't like to take a lot of time off. And it will hurt our sales, and it will hurt our calls for a week or so. But I'm at that point. It's time.
Well, I just want to voice it. I really don't think I'm the only one that feels this way.
No, I appreciate it. Like I say, I'm flattered by it. I try not to, you know, every once in a while when I'll just take a day off, and I'll get blasted by somebody, and they won't even be nice about it. And at first I get annoyed, and then I think, boy, that's a dumb thing to get annoyed about. See, people miss you. They want you on the air. I should not get annoyed about that.
You're responsible for commerce. We can go back and forth with your voice.
So
thanks, Kevin. I do appreciate it.
You're welcome. One of these times, maybe I will. You know, the problem with evergreens, though, is what other shows use as evergreens, that they'll be repeats over and over and over. It'll be like a best of show or something like that. We've never really built any best of shows. And the problem with an evergreen for me, really, if I play them more than once, then people are just going to say, well, I've already heard that one. So if I want to take a week off, you know, I'd have to record at least 5 hours worth of material, which is a lot of work. It's actually much easier just to do five live shows, way easier to do five live shows than it is to try to record 5 hours of monologue. That's why I'm giving everybody plenty of warning. I haven't looked at the schedule yet, but it will be during Christmas or New Year's, whichever one makes the most sense. I do want to take five full days off the show. So, and there won't be any recordings or evergreens. It'll just be the live stream that we're playing. Go back in the app. I'm sure there are some shows you've missed back in there somewhere. Go back and listen to those. All right, we're going to wrap it up for today. Pete, Leroy, anything you guys want to close with?
No. I mean, I can understand you. And it's one nice thing we have here. If someone's off, we have someone else to cover.
Yeah.
We're kind of a one-man band. So if you're off, there's no one to really fill in.
When it comes to the show. Now, you know, our plan moving forward, when we finish our broadcast app, we want to open our network up to other shows. We might reach out to other trucking shows, try to bring them onto our network. We may help people create a new show and put it on our network. And maybe I'll find somebody that could fill in for me when I take a week off.
Yeah, you don't take much time off.
I really don't. Not off the show.
Mm-mm.
Been a long time. I can't even remember the last time I took time off. I don't know when it was.
Yeah, well-deserved vacation.
Yeah, so I'm kind of looking forward to it. And this trip put me over the top. I mean, it's 2 months. I honestly do not feel like I've had a day off in 2 months.
Yeah, you've been on go the whole time.
Yeah, weekends I'm either driving or working on something. Or one Sunday I even did a long Twitter space because I had time. But it's really feeling like it's been a long time since I've even had a day off.
Yeah, there's a lot of prep to the show. I don't know if everyone realizes what's involved in it.
Yeah, it is. So I'm looking forward to getting home, and I'm looking forward to some time off here in a little bit.
Good. Hope you enjoy it.
Yeah, you deserve it.
All right. Even if I don't, I'm taking it. All right. We will see you guys next week. Thanks, Pete and Leroy. As always, if you have any other questions, you can always call Pittsburgh Power directly. We will see you back here tomorrow. It is as far as I know, it's a normal week for the show. I will I'll probably be getting up really early tomorrow morning, like 4 or 4:30, and hitting the road. I'll probably get about 3 hours in, and then I'll stop somewhere. Where am I going to be? Maybe at the in the blues somewhere. I'll stop and do the show tomorrow morning, and then I'll head home, and then Thursday and Friday will be live shows as well. So we'll see you back here tomorrow. Be safe, be profitable, be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey.